Our next case is Tippmann Engineering, LLC versus Innovative Refrigeration Systems, Inc. Mr. McCoy, we're ready to hear your arguments. You have reserved 3 minutes of time for rebuttal, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. Thank you. I guess it's still morning. Good morning, Your Honors. Andrew McCoy on behalf of appellant Tippmann Engineering. May it please the court. We're here today in this appeal because the district court made several fundamental claim construction errors in violation of this court's established precedent.
Mr. McCoy, let me ask you one question. We have here the parent patent, the 047 patent, and there's been discussion in the briefing about the prosecution history relating to that patent.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then we have the 570 patent, which is the one that's now at issue before us. But to resolve this, do we really need to consider anything relating to the 047 patent? Doesn't the case really just turn on what the claims of the 570 patent say and the specification in the 570 patent? Isn't that really what we're looking at? In other words, do we need to concern ourselves with the prosecution history of the 047?
We submit, Your Honor, that the plain and ordinary meaning of the terms in the 570 patent absolutely control, and they should have controlled below. But the issue with the district court's opinion is that it took the 047 prosecution history and said that there was a disclaimer and applied that disclaimer, even though it also acknowledged that the limitations it read into the claims aren't actually in the claims in the 570 patent. So I think to answer your question, we agree with you that the plain and ordinary meaning of the 570 claims applies, and they are not limited to a negative pressure system as a district court.
So you're saying we should just look to the claims and the specification in the 570 patent?
Yes, Your Honor. We think the claims of the 570 patent are broad enough to cover positive and negative pressure systems. I acknowledge that a positive pressure system is not expressly discussed in the written description of the 570 patent.
Well, on the contrary, the 570 patent specification seems to talk, and I'm not talking about the claims now, just the specification, seems to talk extensively about negative pressure. We see in numerous places, you know them as well as I do, references to air being drawn through as opposed to being pushed. And it really does seem to be a case where the drawings, which are part of the specification, which are referenced in the specification, are very compelling in terms of suggesting negative pressure.
Negative pressure is absolutely the embodiment, the illustrative embodiment that is described in both specifications. The 570 is a continuation of the 047, and no amendments were made to the abstract, no amendments were made to the specification, no amendments were made to the drawing. The inventors chose in the 047 to claim a negative pressure system. They disclosed a negative pressure system. And in the 570, they chose to claim more broadly. They used direction neutral language. They did not use words like draw. They didn't use the express limitation negative.
The specification still has to support what they're claiming.
I do agree with that, but there's also plenty of cases from this court that say we don't limit claims to only the single disclosed embodiment, which is exactly what this case involves. The Hillrom.
Just curious, what is the written description support for a positive pressure system in this specification? I mean, I know this is not a written description challenge here, but nevertheless, I'm just curious to know what, if you were to get the claim construction you wanted, what would be the basis for saying such a claim as construed broadly would have adequate written description support?
I think it's a great question, Your Honor. I think this court's precedent in Ariad really squarely addresses that question. You know, in Ariad, the court said, we've made clear that the written description requirement does not demand examples or actual reduction in practice. Instead, we look at a multi-factor test. We look at things like complexity and predictability of the relevant technology, the existing knowledge in the particular field, the predictability of the aspect at issue here. This is simple technology. This is simple mechanical technology. A positive pressure system is literally just rotating the fan the other way, changing the orientation.
That's true, but we also know from our written description case law that obvious variance of what is disclosed is not enough to be written description support.
Well,
so the I cannot remember the name of the case, but there was a case 15 years ago about a sofa console that had certain elements arranged in a certain way, cup holders and things like that. And there was one arrangement that was disclosed, and then the claim was written in a broad way that encompassed other kinds of embodiments, and then that claim went down under the written description basis. So I'm once again, just, we know the law, just assume we know the law. Now let's just get down to brass tacks, looking through your three columns of written description and try to figure out what would be the written description support for a system of applying freezing air in a positive pressure arrangement.
Sure, Your Honor. You know, the most direct written description support specifically is at columns 4 of Appendix 54, lines 11 through 22, where...
Column 4?
Yes, Your Honor.
These are the claims.
The paragraph right before the claims.
Oh, okay.
Where it's stated that a person of ordinary skill in the art would understand that the objective of this invention can be carried out with simple... I'll just read here.
Oh, okay. The classic boilerplate paragraph that we see at the end of so many written descriptions.
I would not respectfully, Your Honor, characterize it as boilerplate, but I understand where you're coming from with that.
Okay.
I would also add that there's no dispute here from the extrinsic evidence, Innovative's expert and our expert witness, evidence that the district court did not consider, that positive and negative systems are used interchangeably in this industry and have been for a long time. There's no dispute at all, and again, the district court did not consider this, that blast freezers can be positive or negative and achieve the precise objective of these systems, which is rapid cooling of air. It doesn't matter if the air goes right to left or left to right. To achieve the objectives of this invention, that is immaterial. Now, we think when you consider all of that evidence, when you consider the extrinsic evidence that the district court did not consider, when you consider the simplicity of this technology, when you consider column 4, we do think that there would be, as well as this court's precedent, such as the Hill-Rom case, Phillips, and many others, there's no reason to limit it to just the negative pressure embodiment disclosed in the patent and described as illustrative. And I would also add, you know, this is not one of the disclaimer cases where the inventor said, my invention is, or the present invention is, or the present invention only operates with a critical feature of negative pressure. That's not one of these cases.
Is it your view that there's a rigid rule that we need to see a statement like that with that kind of a buzzword in the written description in order to conclude that there is some kind of disclaimer?
I think this court has said that it's not a rigid rule and you don't need the buzzwords. But
disclaimer can be implicit.
Well, no, it has to be clear and unmistakable.
Right. Clear. It has to be clear, but it can also be implicit in the sense that it doesn't need to be expressed. I am not, my invention is not a positive pressure system. My invention is a negative pressure system. You don't have to say that in a spec in order to use the spec to limit the claim. Am I right?
That's correct, Your Honor. But I think in those instances where the court has reached that conclusion, it was repeated statements.
So what is the invention here, in your view? What's a claimed advance?
The claimed advance is a more efficient blast freezing system that allows the palletized product to be stacked in such a way and made with the interior chamber in such a way that it actually creates a system where you can have more product, you can move more efficiently throughout the warehouse, you can keep the product in the warehouse and freeze it and store it at the same time.
And your patent covers any and all versions of that?
As the claims, I mean, not any and all versions, as I said before, these types of systems have been known. We think the other limitations in the claims are obviously, you know, what the scope of the claims are and would make them unique over the prior art.
Okay, you're close to your rebuttal time. Well, now you still have 2 minutes before you hit your end of the road.
Your honors have, you know, gone right to the issues here. The one thing I probably haven't mentioned yet, which I think is an important one, is the claim differentiation issue. There can be no reasonable dispute here that the district court ripped limitations out of dependent claims and read them directly into the independent claims. There's a presumption that that should not happen, and the district court provided no reason to overcome that presumption. So that is yet another reason we think the district court erred in construing the claims in this case.
Just a quick housekeeping question about the warehouse or warehouse space limitation and whether a chiller has to be inside the warehouse space or not. I got confused reading both of your briefs, but let me put that to the side. Let's just say if hypothetically we were to affirm the claim construction that these claims are best understood as requiring some kind of negative pressure airflow system, then is that the end of the case? Or would you say, no, you still have to keep going and review the warehouse space claim constructions?
I believe we said on the record before the lower court that would end the case because the accused system is a positive pressure system.
Okay, and then now getting back to the warehouse issue, what's the fight here between the two of you?
The fight here is simply, does the chiller need to be located physically in the warehouse?
Either inside or outside, that's it?
Right. The limitation that was read from a dependent claim into the independent claim said the chiller is in the warehouse.
Okay, so the district court construed the claim to require the warehouse space to be big enough to have to include a chiller in the warehouse. Right?
Correct. After acknowledging that there's actually no reason in the claims to actually do so, the district court nevertheless did that, yes.
Okay. But then, all right. Okay, thanks.
I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Glickin?
Yeah, Glickin, but thank you.
Did I pronounce that correctly?
It's actually Glickin, although half my family pronounces it the other way, too.
Okay.
I can't figure
Before you get into the pressure situation, can you just respond? You were disputing something about the warehouse space limitation in your brief?
Sure. Correct.
You were not happy with the construction of a warehouse space that's large enough to include a chiller?
Well, it wasn't quite. The construction wasn't a warehouse space large enough to include a chiller. The question was where is a chiller? Does the chiller have to be somewhere in the warehouse space, remote from the chamber, this plenum where all of the pallets?
Don't say plenum. I get confused.
Chamber. You want to see chamber? Okay. Remote from the chamber or not? And we get that construction from the specification, column 1, line 64.
Isn't the construction that the chiller is in the warehouse?
Correct, because it says in specification.
So then what are you complaining about?
Because this is where I was confused a little bit by the reply as well. My understanding of the court's instruction is the court said, I'm not going to require the chiller to be in any particular place. So that's what we believe was...
I thought the claim construction, though, specifically, it says the chiller in there.
Let me get to
just like that.
Just like that.
There's got to be a chiller.
It says, a warehouse defining warehouse space, this is Appendix 8, means a structure containing a space uses a giant freezer that contains a chiller and both freezes and maintains perishable foods or like products.
Does it make a difference if the chiller is in the warehouse or not, whether you have a positive flow or a negative flow?
It makes a difference to the efficiency of the system. For a positive pressure system, our point eventually is going to be, you can't just have a chiller cooling this warehouse space and sucking air in from the top where heat rises, which is the point our expert made, right, into the chamber in a positive pressure and pushing it out through the pallets. You have to have a chiller actually cooling the chamber. You have to cool that chamber to whatever the air temperature is that's sufficiently below freezing to blast freeze giant pallets of chicken. You can't just, if you do it if the chiller is remote from the chamber, a positive pressure system, the whole objective of this invention doesn't work. That was one of our arguments. It's a side argument because I think Judge Chen.
What happens if chickens don't chill quick enough, or do they chill not at all?
Obviously time is money in this industry, and also time when you're talking about raw, uncooked chicken is also about bacteria growth. And also the faster you can freeze something, you know, you've all gotten freezer burn things in your freezer. The faster that you can just freeze something, the less time it's going to take to have that freezer burn taste. So you reduce bacteria with the time, you reduce the freezer burn. But really, at the end of the day, it's the negative pressure system that kills the plaintiff's case here, the appellant's case.
But just so I understand, you're fine with this claim construction at A8?
In A8, I am fine with
the...
Correct. I am fine with that claim construction, okay. But I do believe that it is an error in that the chiller must be remote from the chamber. And that, as I was about to say, column 1, line 65... says, as shown, chillers are positioned remotely from the chambers. So there's no equivocal language in the specification that teaches the art here, the invention, is that chillers are positioned remotely. Judge Shaw, going to your question about the prosecution history, I do think it is, it's certainly relevant, obviously, as extrinsic evidence to look at the prosecution history. And I think here in the context of the reply arguments, it's even more relevant, because what you have in the reply is this, is a repeat, and you heard it here from counsel, the airflow direction left to right, it's immaterial. It doesn't matter to our invention. It's a dispute over a bunch of nothing.
Well, you just have to look at this specification.
Correct.
And these claims. That was my question. I read the briefs and
yeah.
The material in the record about the 047 patent prosecution, but it just doesn't seem relevant to me to this issue about negative pressure. We just have to look at, okay, here's the patents at issue, and here are the claims. Is a negative pressure required?
I don't think that the decision about whether or not to consider the 047 patents, the parent prosecution history, I don't think that decision necessarily impacts the what this court should decide. The district court relied on it a lot. I think
that's true. I agree.
It wasn't an error for it to do so. And what I was just pointing out was that we now have an argument that who cares? Negative, positive pressure, it doesn't matter. But if you do look at the statements in the parent prosecution history, you see that the applicant at that time was distinguishing the two prior art references, Durham and Claisen, they were the patents, insisting with italics that these cited patents only claimed a positive pressure system. The patent examiner went through painstakingly for every limitation in
But the 047 patent claims actually, you know, had very clearly written into the claim the idea of a negative pressure system, drawing air into the air chamber. So, of course, they're permitted to make that kind of argument based on the way that claim is written. This claim doesn't have those express statements of negative pressure or drawing air into the air chamber.
Correct, but if you look at, there is common subject matter, that's why the 047 patent prosecution history is relevant. But again, I think the specification here, as you just pointed out, the only thing that Tippmann can point to is this boilerplate language, which under the Wang case that we cite in the brief.
You know, at the same time, under our claim construction principles, you necessarily need to rely on some notion that there was an implicit disclaimer of anything but a negative pressure system. And yes, it does disclose a negative pressure system, but we've also said you don't limit claims to a particular embodiment unless there's some clear indicia otherwise that suggests that you do. And here we don't see those magic words like the present invention includes a negative pressure system, or the present invention is drawing air through the products and then into an air chamber and then up to an exhaust fan. Those statements are not quite there, or not there in the spec. So the next question is, what is it about the spec that tells us that requires us to say the inescapable conclusion from reading the spec is that the character of this invention is necessarily a negative pressure system.
Your Honor, I will point that out. I will say that I think the spec read with the claims and the additional argument we have in the opposition about how what the claims say about where the air must come from to cool the pallets, to freeze the pallets, also dictates a negative pressure, but not focusing on the claims for a minute, just looking at the specification. Your Honor, if it's column 1, and it starts at line 54. So there are various points in the specification, and we point this out on pages 28 to 22 of our brief, where illustrative embodiment is used. Those are all describing non-inventive features. But what I'm seeing here is it says the only significant way to move cold inside the warehouse is by going through and around the product on a pallet. Well, of course, that has to be. The air is drawn into the chamber, can then be recooled and recirculated or exhausted. And here's the critical part. Because the cold air moves around the product prior to entering chamber, it provides an efficient means of
cooling.
Where's
that exactly?
It is column 1, line 57 is where the because starts. So it's the word because is pretty important, and not only that, they chose to frame it as because it moves prior to entering the chamber. It doesn't say because the cold air moves through the pallets, which would suggest eat away. It's just prior to entering the chamber. Well, that is by necessity, of course, a negative pressure system. And it goes on, this is where it says, the chilled air passes through the spaces near through the cases in order to enter chamber, right? Anyway, in the top of line, column 2, line 2, first full sentence, continuing this process freezes the product as well as maintains its frozen condition. And so it talks about the benefits of that particular process, and it is because the air moves into the chamber. Now, reading that in conjunction with the claims, and we point this...
Do you attach any significance to the statements that are... I'm looking at column 1, line, I guess, 48. Cold air produced in a warehouse is drawn through. And then two lines down, this air cools the product down while being drawn into chamber 6.
Oh, absolutely.
And you have further down references to drawn. That suggests negative.
That not only suggests it, it is the definition of a negative system, Judge Shaw. And what I'm saying is, in conjunction with that, you set that up with drawn, and then you say, because it's drawn into the chamber prior to, right, it's drawn through the pallets prior to entering the chamber. Now,
I'm not sure what to think, though, about the two sentences you've skipped over in that paragraph that lead with the phrase in this illustrative embodiment.
Right? Line
46 of column 1. In this illustrative embodiment, pallets 4 are positioned several high on opposing sides in a long chamber 6.
Sure.
And line 51, in an illustrative embodiment, and further described here in openings 30 along the periphery of chamber 6, mate with cases 22 on the pallets. I guess your response to these statements of illustrative embodiment, that those illustrative embodiment statements are confined to the content of those very sentences themselves and don't speak to the larger paragraph where they're talking about drawing air through the spacers within the pallet assembly and then into the air chamber?
That's correct, Your Honor, because if it was more than that, you would think the boilerplate wouldn't be necessary. It'd be a statement like in the advanced cardiovascular case where there was a coaxial and dual lumens, and they said, well, we've described coaxial, but, you know, dual lumens would also work. You would think some sort of positive pressure arrangement would be there in place of boilerplate. But, yes, I do limit that to the actual sentences. And I think what's important there is that, for example, in an illustrative embodiment, as further discussed here, in openings along the periphery of the chamber mate with cases. There are many ways to mate a case, pallet with a chamber wall. So the word mate doesn't really describe anything. In the 047, they were talking about pallet guides and seals and sealingly engaged. And so, yes, I believe those sentences relate to how it mates many different ways. In this case, they mate in a certain way. So, Your Honor, and then finally, going to the claims themselves, one thing that our expert pointed out, and there's no waiver here. This argument was in our expert's, first of all, in the expert's report.
Was it in your claim construction brief?
This particular argument is not in the claim construction brief per se, but it is in there. It's in the expert report. We made it at the Markman hearing without objection. There was an opportunity for cross-examination on what Tipman in its reply brief now says is so plain and common sense. There was no cross-examination. There was no movement to exclude at the end of the evidence, and there was no post-hearing motion to exclude. And Your Honor, in the expert's report in Appendix 248, so the court has it, is the particular place where the expert mentions it. Our opening claim construction brief does argue, of course, that air in the warehouse space has to be set to a desired air temperature, not the chamber. And this is the reason.
So experts were testifying at the Markman hearing?
They were.
As to the meaning of the claims?
They were. They were permitted to testify. And I think here that's proper. We are not relying solely on expert testimony. I think that when you focus on the claim language, and I only have a minute or so, I think we can get there even without expert testimony, which is this. If we look just at claim one, it's representative. The other independent claim is about the same. We have a warehouse defining a warehouse space set to a desired air temperature. So we know the warehouse space is set to the desired air temperature. Going down to line 35, one of the apparatus, of course, we know is there's an airflow chamber that has an air inlet and an air outlet. And then if we go down to line 40, we get to a paragraph that starts with a wall disposed, and it's talking about the wall of the chamber and the pallets against it. But it says, whereby, and this is line 45, whereby air at the desired air temperature can pass into the airflow pathway of the pallet assembly, thereby transfer heat before the product and the air. Well, the air at the desired air temperature, if we go back to line 26, is in the warehouse space, which is not in the chamber. So in order for air at that desired air temperature to pass through the pallet airflow pathways and thereby transfer heat, it has to be coming from the warehouse space because the only requirement of the
patent. The other side retorted that if you have the air in the warehouse space at the desired temperature and then going through the fan using a positive pressure system, that same air will still be at the desired temperature when it's sitting inside the airflow chamber because its temperature isn't going to change just by going through the fan.
First of all, Your Honor, the air in the chamber is not the same temperature as in the warehouse space. Picture, you have a walled-off chamber.
About in a positive pressure system.
Correct. In a positive pressure system, one, it's pulling air from where the heat rises, and this is what our expert explained.
That air is in the warehouse space. That it's already preset to a desired temperature. So whatever temperature, that's all the air in the warehouse. Not just, the air along the floor. It also necessarily includes the air near the top of the warehouse.
Maybe, but I think it is common parlance that, of course, air is going to rise. It's always going to be warmer up top. And I understand that the idea is you can set it. Maybe you put your thermometer at the top. That's an immensely inefficient way. I mean, imagine if your house was, you want to take it during the summer, all of the air from your house.
We have to live in a certain fiction when we're just looking at the climate.
Correct.
We can't just be worrying about all these other issues.
But Your Honor, you'd be right in a static system. If things were just cool and sat there. But that's not the way it is. There's a massive amount of airflow. In a positive pressure system, you're taking the air and you're pushing it through warm pallets. And so you're filling the airway aisles, and I don't want to take too much time, with warm air. And that's the problem. You can't store frozen pallets of product when you're pushing warm air into the aisles. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Mr. McCoy, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, Judge Chin, you nailed it right on the head with some of your questions here for my opposing counsel. This is a system where it is continuously moving air hours and hours at a time to maintain these products frozen. This isn't just one blast shot of air where warm air suddenly rises and we have nothing. It has nowhere to go. And this is, column two, if you just keep reading where my opposing counsel was reading, continuing this process freezes the products as well as maintains its frozen condition. The experts also talk about it in their declarations. Appendix 228 through 230, for example, Innovative's expert talks about how these systems operate. This isn't just a little snapshot in time where air is just puffed into a chamber and it freezes the product. This is a continuous system. It's a closed system where air is constantly flowing. There's no limitation in these claims to the precise location of the inlets and the outlets, like there was in the 047. There's no limitations to the precise location of the fans. There's no limitations to the precise location of the chillers. These are broader claims. And when we're looking at column one that my opposing counsel was drawing to the court's attention, that was mentioned in their brief, what seems to be overlooked here is that is describing a negative pressure system. It is not, however, limiting this invention to that system. It doesn't say the only way the objective of this system is accomplished is because the cold air moves around the product before entering the chamber. It's just simply describing a negative pressure system. So unless the court has any additional questions for me, I think we have covered all of the key points here, but I'll just quickly summarize them. This is not a case where we should be limiting the case to the illustrative embodiment. The Hillrom case is directly on point. When you look at the written description factors and area, this is simple technology. There's no dispute from the experts in this case that positive and negative pressure systems were known. There's no dispute that positive and negative pressure systems accomplished the objectives of this invention, and there's no reason to limit the claims as the district court did. It was improper application of decades of disclaimer precedent, and we ask that the court vacate the claim constructions, reverse, and remand.
Okay, thank you. We thank all the parties this morning for the arguments. This court now remains in recess.
Thank you, Your Honor.